All right. So we began this series last week, and we said we're going to be looking at the last words that Jesus shared the last week of his life. He knew that really he had this last week of his life left, and he sort of knew what was coming. And so as he taught his followers that last week, he knew he just had the opportunity to really press home the things that he thought was the most important. And we said last week when he entered Jerusalem, you remember he wept over Jerusalem. And he said he wept over the city and he wept over the people. And he said, basically he said, they're missing God. Like, I'm showing up. I've been teaching here in Israel and now I'm showing up in Jerusalem. And these people, you know, I'm right here in front of their faces. And yet they're missing me. They're missing God. And we said, you know, we have that same danger in our life. These were people who are very religious, and yet they miss God right in front of them. And so that means any of us can miss God in front of us. And so threw out a challenge and said, why don't you observe Lent for the next 40 days or so, where you give something up. A lot of people give something up for Lent. And when you give something up, what it does is it forces you to start thinking, you know, am I more concerned about missing this thing that I'm giving up? Or am I more concerned about missing God in my life? And we've heard some cool stories. I know some people have given up. I talked to one person that gave up alcohol. They're not like this huge drinker, but, you know, they drink, you know, wine at dinner or something like that. They gave that up. I talked to one person that gave up coffee. Heard about another person who gave up Facebook. And they're like, this person is like addicted to Facebook. Like, they're on it all day long. And they said day one was like really, really hard. And yet, every minute of that day, as they wanted to go to their computer and check Facebook, it was where that question came up. Like, am I more consumed with missing Facebook in my life? Or am I more consumed with potentially missing God in my life? So, if you're taking the Lent challenge, hang in there, persevere, stay strong. You'll make it through. Tonight, we're going to look at a story that Jesus told in the last week of his life. And stories, Jesus told a lot of stories throughout his ministry. And I think the reason is because we know stories are really, really powerful. I mean, some of you have kids, and you know this. So you read your kids' stories at the end of the night. You know, you pull out Thomas the Train or however old your kids are, and you read them a story. And you know that when you read them a story, something about stories teaches principles. It teaches values to your kids better than any. I mean, you can give them a list of do's and don'ts and a, you know, set of rules. But if you can communicate through a story, it does a whole lot better job. Some of you know this. If you love good films, good movies, good books, whenever any of us go see a good movie, you know, a great story in a movie, it just pulls you right in. It just evokes a lot of emotion. You can almost feel yourself right in the story. Another example is good stories, I think, breed relationships. If you're in a small group, in my small group, just this past week, we started a new small group and we've got a new group of people. And this one girl in our group shared her story this past week in our group. And she didn't take the whole time. She just took a few minutes and she shared a few highlights of her sort of life story and her journey of faith, shared some things that have been tough in her life. And immediately, like within 10 or 15 minutes, all of us in the group felt like we knew her so much better. We resonated with her. We could understand her. We had a new level of respect for her. And the group just seemed to bond a little bit more because somebody shared their story. Now, I think because of all of these reasons, this is why Jesus shared so many stories. In fact, if you read through the Gospels, you see that over and over and over, rather than actually teaching, and he did teach some, but more often than not, he shared a story. And so tonight, we're going to look at actually the last story he shared. This is the last story before he went to the cross. It's the last story that's recorded in any of the Gospels that Jesus shared. And because it's the last one, it's found in Matthew chapter 25. If you brought a Bible, you can go ahead and turn there and we'll read it together. But because it's the last one, again, it sort of bears a little more importance because it says, you know, if Jesus communicated this story and it was one of the last things he shared with his followers before he went to the cross, then he must have believed it communicated something really important. So what was going on this time is that all throughout Jesus's ministry, he had often talked about this thing called the kingdom of God. He kept talking about this kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. He had told his followers that God is going to bring this kingdom. God's going to show up one day and usher in this new kingdom. God was going to come in power. In fact, remember how he taught them to pray? You know, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. So they were always thinking about this thing, and yet they never fully understood it. Like, they're always at, you know, what does that mean, Jesus? You keep talking about it. Are you going to come back like a king? You know, are we talking kingdom like Israel used to have kingdom? You know, where we go out in battle and we defeat our enemies. Is that the kind of kingdom you're talking about? And so one day, and again, this is the last week of his life. It's after he's coming to Jerusalem with his followers to celebrate Passover. One of his followers actually pipes up and says, all right, Jesus, tell us, like, explain this whole kingdom thing to us. You keep talking about when you're going to come, the Son of Man's going to come and bring this kingdom. Just tell us, what can we look for? What can we expect when you bring this kingdom? And so Jesus gives them this really, really long answer. He walks out of Jerusalem, and they're sitting on the Mount of Olives, the same place we talked about last week. And he sits them down and gives them this really long answer. And he talks about all these signs and all these apocalyptic things that are going to happen when this kingdom come, when God decides to come in power to Israel. And it's recorded in three of the Gospels, and it's really long. It takes up like two chapters, this long answer he gives them. And we're not going to read the long answer tonight, but he realizes that they're not really getting it. Like, they're not really understanding what he's saying. And so Jesus decides to tell them a few stories. And so he says, well, let me tell you what the kingdom is really like. Let me tell you a story. And he tells them another one. And then finally he tells them a third story. And this is the one we're going to read tonight. It's sort of the last story that Jesus told. It's found in Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 14. And this is what it says. Again, so I'm telling you another story. It will be, and it refers back to the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. It's what he had been talking about. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one, he gave 5 bags of gold. To another, 2 bags of gold. And to another, 1 bag, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. So, there's a man, the story goes, so there's a man, all right, again, I just can't move, can I? Okay, I'll just stand here. So there's a man that goes on this journey, and he's obviously a wealthy man. He's got a lot of wealth. He's got servants, so that also tells us he's a wealthy man. He pulls 3 of his servants together. We don't know if he had more servants, but he pulls at least 3 of them together. And to one of them, he gives 5 bags of gold, then another 2 bags, then another 1 bag. Now, at that time, 1 bag of gold, we don't know exactly how much it cost, but we know about how much it weighed. 1 bag of gold weighed about 75 pounds. Now, can you imagine that? A 75-pound bag of gold, like, that's 3 times the weight of one of my children. Like, that's a huge bag of gold. And so it's a lot of money. We don't know exactly how much, but probably about $500,000 or $1 million worth in our culture. So it's like, again, in our culture, it'd be like a businessman who started this business. He's doing really well. He pulls in 3 of his top employees and he says, all right, you know, number one, Joe, you know, I'm going to give you 5. I'm about to go away. I've got to take care of some business somewhere else. I've got a few projects I need to work on. And so I'm going to give you $5 million, sort of this $5 million portion of the business that I want you to oversee while I'm gone. And, you know, Frank, I'm going to give you this $2 million portion of the business. And, you know, Jeff, I'm going to give you this, you know, $1 million portion of the business. And so this is the picture. And he gives it to them, and it says he entrusted them with wealth, each according to his ability. Meaning, I know that each of you can manage these 3 different amounts of money, invest it, take care of it, grow it while I'm gone. And the implication is, when I come back, we'll talk about it. So, continue in verse 16. This is what happens. It says, the man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground,
and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master's servants returned and settled accounts with them. Now, let me ask you a question. If you are one of these servants, and the master has returned and said, you know, I want you to come on into my office, we're going to talk, and let's settle accounts, find out how you did while I was gone, how would you feel going into that meeting? Like, what would be your emotions? Would you be excited at that meeting? Would you be looking forward to it? Would you be looking forward to getting together with the master to talk about it? Or would you be dreading that meeting? And the answer is, it all depends on how well you invested what he gave you while he was gone. Now, some of you know this feeling. You're in maybe sales, and so you have this quarterly meeting, you know, every quarter with the rest of your staff and maybe your boss, or you're in a position in your vocation where you manage an amount of money, or you manage some sort of portion of a business, or you manage investments. And so, again, every quarter or every certain amount of time, you get together, and you know, you're either looking forward to that meeting, if you've had a great quarter, if sales have gone well, if you've invested well, if things have been well, you're excited about it, you've got the numbers, you're ready to walk in, you've got handouts, you've got a presentation, everything's going well, or you're not so excited about the meeting. I mean, if you've had a bad quarter, if things haven't gone so well, you're not looking forward to it. I mean, nobody wants to walk into a meeting like that and say, the investments didn't go so good this quarter, you know, sales didn't go so good, the project didn't turn out very good this quarter. And so that was the feeling that these three servants had. How would they feel going into this meeting? It all depended on how well they had invested the master's money. So back to the story, verse 20, this is what happened when they come together. The man who had received five bags of gold brought the other five. Master, he said, you entrusted me with five bags of gold. See, I have gained five more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. Faithful with a few things, I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. So, as you can expect, the first servant goes in, he's excited about the meeting, he shares what we've done. You gave me these five bags, I invested it, I got five bags more. The master's pleased, everyone's excited. And then the master rewards him and says, you've done such a great job that I'm going to give you more authority. I'm going to give you more responsibility. I'm going to give you more opportunity to continue investing and doing what you've been doing so well. Let's read on. Look at the next guy. It says, verse 22, the man with two bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with two bags of gold. See, I have gained two more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. So the second servant also doubled his investment. And he comes in and he tells the master. And notice the master doesn't treat him differently. He doesn't say, well, you know, Frank made $5 million and you only made $2 million. No, because the master knows he'd given them different amounts to begin with according to their abilities. And because they both invested well and they both demonstrated that they were good stewards of what the master had given them, the master praised them equally. And he rewarded both of them. And he said to both of them, you know, here's more responsibility, more opportunity going forward because you've demonstrated you've been a good steward of what I gave you. Now, look at the third servant, verse 24. Then the man who had received one bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. So you can almost picture the conversation here between the master and this guy. Like, so what'd you do with the money? Well, I went and hid it in the ground. Why did you hide it in the ground? Well, because I was afraid of losing it. Well, why didn't you invest it? I mean, why didn't you do something with it? Why didn't you do something good with it? Because I entrusted it to you to invest with it. Why didn't you do what you could with it? Well, because here's what I know about you. And here's what I've heard about you, and I'm a servant, and I know you're the master, but as I've looked at you, and as I've heard things about you, it seems like you're a very hard man. You're exacting, you've got high standards, you know, you seem to take things that don't belong to you. And I knew that if I invested this money that you had given me, and I lost it all, then you would probably be really, really upset with me, and you'd probably punish me. And so I just dug a hole, and I put it in the ground to make sure I kept it safe. Look at how the master responds. Verse 26, his master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown, and I gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that, you know, at the very least, when I returned, I would have received it back with interest." He goes on. He says, "Take the bag of gold," and he's probably talking to other servants now, "take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For those who have will be given more, and they will have an abundance. As for those who do not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now, that's kind of hardcore. That's a tough ending. You know, we read that, and I think there's a tendency to start, you know, saying, what is Jesus saying here in this parable, and what does this mean? And, you know, is he talking about, like, hell or eternal punishment, or, you know, weeping and gnashing of teeth? And why did he, you know, punish him so badly? For why did he call him wicked and lazy and all those things? And yet, even though it seems a little harsh to us, I don't think it would have been harsh to Jesus' followers. Like, they would have heard the story, and it wouldn't have been a surprise ending. I mean, they would have said, well, of course that's what you do. I mean, the servant didn't do what he was supposed to do. The master entrusted him with all of this money. He gave it to him to invest, and when he returned, the guy hadn't invested. He hadn't done anything. He hadn't done what he was supposed to do. As a servant, he was supposed to serve the master and take care of his wealth and invest it, and yet he hadn't done it. And if he's not able to do what he's supposed to do, then why would the master even keep him around anymore? I mean, he did what he should have done. Now, what does all of this mean for us? You know, as Jesus told this story to his followers, and as we read the story and we ask the question, does this story mean anything for us? Here's what I think Jesus was saying. Here's what I think he was trying to communicate to the people who are listening. And here's what I think he's trying to communicate to each one of us. It's obvious. The master represents God in the story. And just like God had given these things to these servants, God has given a few things to each one of us. Number one, he's given each one of us something to invest. Number two, he's given us the responsibility to invest it. And then number three, he's given us the promise of purpose and fulfillment when we invest. Now, what has he given each one of us to invest? Well, first of all, he's given all of us time. We've got moments in the day, hours in the day, days in the week, weeks, months, years. I mean, think about it. Some of us have been given 60 years in our lives, 70 years, 80 years, 90. I mean, we've been given a lifetime. What would it look like if we begin to see the time we've been given as something to invest? You know, we've also been given talents. Every single person in this room has talents or strengths or gifts. Some of you are really good at working with people. Some of you are good at working with your hands. Some of you are good at managing projects, good at numbers, you know, crunching numbers and details. Some of you are good at helping out other people when they're going through difficult times, you know, comforting them. Some of you are really artistically and creatively inclined. Like, you can see things and hear things and create things that a lot of people can't create. Some of us are, you know, relationships people. Some of us are task people. But the bottom line is God has given every single one of us gifts and talents. And what if we begin to ask ourselves the question, am I investing those talents in what God has called me to invest them in? You know what? God's not only just given us time, he's not only given us talent, but he's also given us treasure. Some of us make a little bit of money, not much. We wish it was more. Some of us make a little more. Some of us make a lot of money. Some of us have acquired things. Treasure's not just money, but stuff as well. Some of us have acquired things. Some of us have. Some of us have a whole bunch of stuff. And in fact, you know, if we're being honest tonight, we all live in America. We're all doing pretty good compared to most people in the world. For the most part, we all say we've got some pretty decent treasure. And so the question is, the kind of resources, the kind of stuff, the kind of money we have, are we investing that in what God's called us to invest it in? Now, I think the challenge for some of us tonight, maybe you're somebody who's sitting here and you say, you know what? I've never thought about it that way. I don't know that I really am investing, you know, much of any of those things in things outside of myself. And if that's you tonight, I think God would be saying you need to take a portion of the time you've been given and you need to invest it. Like, you need to say, maybe there's a couple of hours in my week that I can give towards someone else. Maybe there's a Saturday every few weeks that I can go help out with a Habitat house, you know, and build a house for somebody who doesn't have a house, who doesn't own a house, who needs it. Maybe there's an hour or two I can give each week to mentor a child, you know, that doesn't have a parent. Maybe there's an hour or two I can give to an organization or to a cause, to something in Denver that would help out the city of Denver. Maybe I need to invest a portion of my time in what God is doing. Maybe I need to invest a portion of my talent. You know, maybe I need to say, I use most of my talent at work and to benefit my family, but maybe there's some of my talent that I can invest in something that's outside of myself. You know what? Some of us maybe need to ask the question, is there a portion of my treasure that I can invest? Like, is there a portion of the money that I make that I can begin investing? You know, there's a lot of people who give money regularly. It's called tithing. And what they do is they take, and some people start at like 10%. There's all different kinds of percentages, but some people will take a percentage and they'll say, you know what, of the salary that I make, I just start right off the top and I take 10% and I give it to the church, or I give it to some, you know, nonprofit organizations or some causes or things that I believe in, things that I think are doing God's work, you know, in this city, in this world. That's the kind of investment that maybe you need to consider making. Maybe you've said, I've never really thought about it that way. I don't make a ton of money. I'm kind of stretched financially right now. Maybe it's not money, stuff. You know, maybe there's something you've got laying around, but there's a portion of your treasure that you can say, I want to invest it. You know, as we started moving into this building and thinking about starting to meet here, we came and we looked at the sound system, and you know, they had a pretty decent sound system here, but we said, you know what, to kind of do a full band and do what we want to do and make it sound good, we're probably going to have to upgrade some components. And so as we looked at it, we said, we really need somebody who knows what they're doing to come in, spend a fair amount of time. We probably need a couple of more speakers. The four speakers they have are good, but as we looked at it, it felt like we needed two more speakers up here. And yet those were probably going to cost like $1,500. Speakers aren't cheap. And so we started looking at it and thinking about it. And Jeff Scholler, who does sound for us, said, you know what? I've got some talent in that area. I know how to do sound. I can help you think about this room and figuring out how to improve the sound or make things sound better. And he said, you know what? I've also got a little bit of time in my life. I wish I didn't have so much time right now, but I've got some extra hours that I could give you. I can come up here. And a couple weeks ago, he spent like 3 or 4 days, many hours every day, setting stuff up, installing stuff. And then he said, guess what? I've got a couple of extra speakers laying around. Because I used to have like this dream of being like a major rock star. And so I bought all this cool gear. And maybe he still has the dream. Do you still have the dream, Jeff? Yes.
I do not have the dream.
Yeah, okay. And he said, you know what? I've got these great speakers. And they're exactly what you would need for this room. And I don't have a lot of money right now. I don't have a lot of other stuff. But I've got these great speakers. And you can use them. And the church is welcome to use them right now. If I can... And basically what Jeff is saying is, I've got a little bit of time, I've got some talent, and I've even got some treasure that I can invest in what's happening here. Now, this isn't about necessarily New Denver Church. This isn't about, you know, make you feel guilty and you need to invest more, give more. It's not about our church. It's about investing in the things where you feel like you're getting on board with the vision, whether it's our church or whether it's other organizations or causes. And maybe you're someone that you're sitting here tonight, and my assumption is probably most of us, you probably are investing. I know a lot of you that volunteer places, you probably give some of your money, you probably give some of your time and your talent. And so I don't think that Jesus' message is you need to do more. Like, I don't think Jesus' message is a guilt thing. Like, you're doing a little bit, and I want you to feel really guilty, you need to start doing a whole lot more. I don't think that's what he's saying if that's where you feel like you are tonight. In fact, I think Jesus' message is a whole lot bigger and a whole lot broader than that. I think it's not about, are you giving this much and do you need to give more? I think it's about, how do you actually view your entire life? What is your perspective on life? And I think Jesus, what he would say to us tonight is you need to take everything. You need to take all of your time and all of your talent and all of your treasure, and you need to not take it and bury it in the ground, but you need to take it all and go all in. And don't play it safe, but take everything you have and begin to view all of your time through this lens. And say, every single hour of my day that I spend at work, that I spend with my family, that I spend with my friends, that I spend at church, that I spend in my neighborhood, that I spend doing stuff, every talent you've got, every way that God has gifted you, that you do at work, that you do in other places, every aspect of treasure you've got, your entire salary, your entire savings, all of the stuff you have, the extra car you have, the extra clothes you have, you know, the other house you have, you need to begin to say, I'm not going to take all that stuff and just bury it in the ground and sit on it and hide it because I'm scared and I'm not sure what to do. You need to take it all and go all in and not play it safe anymore. If you're an athlete or if you've been watching the Olympics, you know this is true. I mean, think about these Olympians. They've spent the last 4 years of their life preparing for this moment. They've been given tons of time, tons of talent, and tons of treasure to prepare for this moment. And so when they show up and they perform over these last couple of weeks, do you think they come in and sort of play it safe? Do they put together a safe routine? Do they put together a safe ski jump or something like that? No. They know that it's time to go all in, because if they want to stand on that medal stand at the end of the night, they got to bring everything they've got. They've got to take risks, and they've got to take everything that God has given them and lay it all on the line and go all in. And I think that's what God is challenging each one of us to think about tonight. But if you're like me, you probably get caught in this mentality where you're like the third servant. I mean, my tendency, if I'm being really honest, my tendency is to hold back and to take all the stuff that God has given me and to focus it on me and sort of dig a little hole and bury it in the ground and play it safe. I mean, that's just my tendency. And do you know what the problem with the third servant was? It wasn't that he was a bad investor. It was that he didn't even invest at all. Why? Because he was scared. Like, he was fearful. He was scared of losing what he did have. And so he let his fear drive him to make an unwise decision. In fact, he let his fear of the unknown, what if I do invest it and I lose it all, drive him to make a decision about what was known. And what's known? Well, we know God has given all of us something to invest, responsibility to invest it, and the promise that we'll have purpose and fulfillment when we do invest it. So I think even if you're somebody who would say tonight, well, I'm not really a Christian, or I believe in God, but I'm still not sure about church or Jesus or all those kind of things, I think the message is even the same for you. Because I think what God is saying is you will have no more purpose and fulfillment in your life than when you invest it totally in what I'm doing in the world. And here's the truth. At the end of our lives, we'll get to this place where we'll meet Jesus. And we'll walk up to him. And what would it be like if we were able to walk up to him and say, you know what, God, it took me a while to get there. It was a long journey, but I finally got to a place in my life where I just put it all on the line. And I just went all in. And I took everything. I took all the time you've given me, all the treasure you give me, all the talent you give me, and I fully invested it. And sometimes I invested it poorly, and sometimes I fell flat on my face, and sometimes I failed, and sometimes I didn't do it well. But I didn't let that scare me, and I didn't let those fears keep me from holding back. I invested it totally in the way you called me to. I think if we're able to say that, he'll look back at each one of us and he'll say, well done, good and faithful servant. That's all I asked you to do. Well done, good and faithful servant. So here's the question, and this is obvious. Do you feel like you're investing your life? You know, do you feel like, if you think about those categories, if you think about the way you spend your time, the way you think about the way you spend your talents, the way you spend your treasure, are you investing those things? Because here's the truth. If we're not investing them, you know what we're doing? We're just spending them. I mean, it's not that different than when you go through the drive-thru at McDonald's and you buy a Big Mac meal and you spend it on that and you spend $5 for a Big Mac meal and you eat it and it tastes really good, or at least for me, it tastes really good. And it's great and it fulfills you for about all of 30 minutes or maybe an hour or maybe 2 hours. But 2 or 3 hours later, what do you have to show for it? Nothing whatsoever. You spent that on something that has no lasting fulfillment whatsoever. And if we're not investing our lives, if we're not investing our time and our talent and our treasure, that's what we're doing with them. We're just spending them on things that we'll get to the end of our life and we'll say, oh my gosh, I spent my life on stuff that had no lasting significance whatsoever. You know, at one point Jesus said, you remember the verse? He said, I came to give you life and to give you life to the full or abundantly. And here's the truth. If we want to know life abundantly, I think we've got to invest our lives to the fullest. Because when we invest our lives to the fullest, we'll begin to know that kind of abundant life that God wants to give each one of us, because that's what he made us for. And here's the bottom line. When Jesus told this story to his followers, he told it to them on a Tuesday. And 3 days later, on a Friday, he went. He went all in for each one of us. And he invested everything in his life for all of us. That's the model that he set for us. He said, I'm not asking you to do anything that I'm not willing to do for you. So I'm going to take it all on myself, and I'm going to provide you forgiveness. I'm going to provide you life so that you can invest your life in what I've called you to do. So let me close this in prayer, and then we'll close by singing a song. Father God, I pray that you would help each one of us begin to view our lives differently. I pray that you would help me begin to view my time differently, the money that I make differently, my stuff. Lord, I pray that you give us wisdom as we try to invest. I pray that you would help us to make wise decisions as we think about how can we do things, how can we spend time, how can we spend money, how can we spend our talent in such ways that they benefit you and your kingdom. And Lord God, I pray that you wouldn't let fear hold us back from investing, even when we don't know how or even when we're not sure what to do. Lord, I pray that we would never be driven by fear. That we'd never dig holes and take our stuff and think, well, what if I get in a situation where I don't have enough money and I need that money back, or I shouldn't commit to this because what if I need some extra time over here? Lord, don't let us be driven by our fear of the unknown. Let us just be driven by what we do know, that you love us, that you'll always take care of us, that you're trustworthy, and that you paved the way for each of us to trust you. I pray all this in your name.